Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. You have reached Blog Talk Radio, and this is Cassandra Day. You're on the edge. And today I'm sitting in lovely Virginia where we've had a change of weather. It's actually cool today. And I have an incredible guest with me. She writes something that's near and dear to my heart, spanking. For any of you guys who know me, you know I do an awful lot of writing about that. Renee Rose is actually, she's a modern dance teacher, which I think is a fabulous real profession, or I don't know, maybe the writing is the real and the dancing's on the side. She happens to write the spanking books, including titles such as The Darlington Incident, Safe in His Arms, and The Devil of Whiskey Row. She also writes some BDSM as another author, and we'll kind of touch base with her on that as well. So welcome, Miss Renee.
Why, thank you so much for having me. This is such a delight.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on here. I've admired your writing for quite some time, and you and I kind of go in and out of some different rooms on Facebook and chat occasionally, so I'm delighted to have snag you on the show, so to speak.
Absolutely. Great.
So tell me a little bit about why you started writing spanking stories.
Well, I am sort of a lifelong spanko. I from the time I can remember spanking my dolls as a young child, you know, I've always had this orientation, but I kind of just stuffed it because I thought it was inappropriate. And but all the little stories I would make up in my head had spankings. Any movie I would see, I would be like, that would have been better with spanking, you know. And so then one day, just over 2 years ago, I discovered there was a genre called spanking fiction, and I knew I'd found my calling. I'd been a writer. I got my degree in creative writing, and I'd worked as a technical writer, and I was trying to write my first romance novel, and I had edited spanking out because I thought that was inappropriate. And then, you know, it was like the angels singing when I realized I didn't have to edit it out, and there was actually a market for what I wanted to write. So it was definitely the universe was calling me toward my my true genre.
How have they been received with, well, a combination, your family, your friends, and then the colleagues and, you know, publishers, readers, that kind of thing?
So I, you know, my very first, I literally, like, discovered that spanking romance existed, and I sat down and I wrote a story in 6 days. I sent it off. It was published within 2 weeks, and then, you know, it was selling at a really good rate for about 3 months. So it was that sort of confirmation that, like, okay, I can do this. It's this is where I belong. You know, the next things weren't as easy, but I felt like it was that, you know, where the universe kind of shows you, like, oh, yeah, you're on the right path. That's definitely for you. So that part was great. And then I was really, I mean, it was like, I didn't even tell my husband until it was accepted for publication. You know, it took me a little while to, and then it was, you know, I didn't tell friends for a long time. And now I think I'm just more comfortable with myself and what I write. I don't think there's any reason to be ashamed of it. And I'm much more open. I'll share my pen name with people. They're welcome to go look at my books if they want. You know, and I've had some friends who say, okay, it's not really my cup of tea, but, you know, that's great. Good for you.
Right.
But I think that's, you know, that's kind of part of the game.
Oh, it is. And I think that there's a tremendous interest in it. I don't know for you, but I write spanking stories as well. As my blog, of course, you have to try to keep up with garnering their interest and letting them know what you do, and they want you to be a real person. And my spanking stories / concepts of them, whether I'm writing about implements or whatever, tend to be the highest number or volume read than any of the other ones. Do you find that to be true with your work?
Definitely. I think, and it used to be really easy to, I think there's been sort of growth in the market lately, but it used to be super easy. All you had to do was tag something spanking story and you had, you know, 500 hits that day. Like, it was pretty, but, you know, I think there's more out there now, so it's not quite as easy. But yes, I do think that shame is part of why spanking sells, and part of the appeal with, and we can talk about this later with why I chose a different pen name for straight BDSM, but I think part of the appeal for spankos is the shame component. And so because maybe they're not actualized in real life, there's a lot of that, you know, scanning the internet for what they're looking for. And so, you know, I notice, like, people are buying my books at night or, you know, on the weekends. And I think that, you know, they're definitely, like, looking for their fix.
That's ironic you say that, because I do think it is a fix. And if you look at the trends on some of the blog sites, they'll say what's trending today, and it's always spanking, hard spanking, over the knee, discipline, you know, and I find it funny. My number one that is always up there is submitting to a spanking humiliation. It has been number one for me for almost 2 years, and I find that incredibly powerful, and also it does the same thing for me. It affirms that writing spanking stories is something people want. Oddly enough, yeah. My number one day are Mondays. More hits on my blog on Mondays.
Interesting.
Maybe they're going back to work and they go, eh.
Yeah, they need. Yeah, they maybe especially need their fix on Monday, right?
I don't necessarily blame them. Well, I don't live. You don't practice or live the lifestyle. I realize that this is fantasy based. Some people do. You and I had talked briefly about that. But how do you feel about the concept in general? Do you think we'd be a better society if there was one head of the household and children actually got spanked as they used to when we were smaller children?
I don't. I practice for us stays in the bedroom. I was originally completely fascinated by domestic discipline, and I, you know, asked my husband, and he was like, that is totally dysfunctional. And, you know, that kind of hurt my feelings. But, you know, now that I've kind of explored, and we've, you know, explored it all fully, like in the erotic setting, I think that that's enough for me. And I think that times even where it strayed, even playfully into real punishment, my emotions became so tangled that with, you know, feeling bad about myself, feeling like I'd failed. And I think, you know, probably for spankos, that's part of the appeal, is like having this outside authority to punish you when you've been wrong and to build you back up afterwards. But, I mean, I think for me that was pretty pretty complicated. It's asking a lot of my husband, who's not a spanko. You know, it's kind of, you know, so I think, you know, he's willing to do it in the bedroom to get me off, but it's a little bit different when I want that to be, you know, a lifestyle where he has to govern me like a child. I think he wasn't really, you know, interested in that sort of thing. And I think I can see, it's pretty emotionally challenging. Like and that's why it brings couples so much closer. I think that's why couples absolutely, you know, rave about how it saved their marriages, because it's very intense, but you have to both be willing to commit to that intensity.
I completely agree with you. I think that our society may have built itself around a quality of a relationship to the point that if that's what you started out with, I think it is very difficult to pull it back into another place that is entirely different, not only for the two of you, but how society might view you in any conversation or, you know, the concept of sharing this with anyone. It's very daunting at best. So I totally get where you're coming from.
I mean, I think in some ways, you know, before in exploring this, it's gotten me clear on, and it has helped fix things in our relationship, in that I was playing child often because I, you know, that was my streak. And then I would sort of resent him, you know, because I wanted him to be in charge and him to make decisions. And so as I've gotten clear, like, oh, this is a fetish for me, then we played at it, you know, where I'd say, hey, instead of saying like, hey, this is what I'm doing, I'd say, hey, may I go see a movie and leave you with the kids or whatever. And then, you know, and he loved it, of course, because he doesn't want to be asked instead of told, right?
Right.
We'll see, I lost my thread. Well, I did have some thought about that. I think, but then eventually you're right, like there is this equality piece where I'm coming back around to like, okay, I could be an equal now. Like it was really fun to play with that. And now I'm really clear on like, I don't have to act like a child, which I was doing not on purpose. It was sort of just my underlying bent because as a submissive and spanko. And so now that I'm clear, like, oh, that was a fetish, let's play with it. And now we've played with it, and now I can come back and be an equal partner in this relationship and be an adult when I need to be.
And that's fascinating that you would say that, and I don't want to get, you know, too off tangent here, but since spanking is, and the concept of spanking is not always, as you've well pointed out, about erotic and in the bedroom. For so many people, it is indeed that lifestyle where punishment is used, and spanking oftentimes is the method of that punishment. But I think that your viewpoint is something that I've not heard before. Quite fascinating to hear the way that you have still incorporated it into your life, but you've brought it around to another level that I'm not sure a lot of people would think about. That's really fascinating here for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a journey. I mean, I think that I think the most important thing is acknowledging that it's a fetish, because once you do, you can accept and embrace it and go with it. And then once you've fully explored it, it's much clearer to me, like, what were the aspects of my personality that were they're totally appropriate in the fetish context, and they're inappropriate in the we're running a family together and I need you to pull your weight context, you know?
Right.
So it was like getting that clarity, I think, you know, and it was the same thing before I admitted even to my husband that I was a spanko. You know, it was like any male authority could make me go weak in the knee. So it was like I wasn't, you know, I was working as a technical writer for an engineering firm, and like male bosses would make me turn to jelly instead of being able to like speak my mind like a professional woman. Mm-hmm. I would go, okay, all right, thanks. What can I do for you? You know, instead of like being like, no, this is not right. Here's what you said. This, you know, I couldn't, but if it was a female, I could have, but it was like, I had, you know, and so once I accepted that this was this piece of me that's fetish and I was, you know, embracing it in the bedroom, men don't do that to me anymore. Like,
well,
I don't turn weak. Yeah. So it was like embracing the fetish made me stronger, even though I was embracing my submissive side.
Good for you. That, you know, and you were my friend, and I unfortunately yet have to meet you. Hopefully one day we will. But I'm proud of you for saying that, for jumping out of that, you know, kind of terrified skin that you had and being able to do that. I think that probably makes you a stronger writer.
Thank you. I hope so.
Oh, I don't have any doubt. Your reputation is not only as an amazing author, that your stories are very in-depth, heartfelt, warming, and all of that, but that you're an excellent person, too. And I think that sometimes people don't realize that there's so many sides to being a writer. It's not just putting, you know, your thoughts on paper and, you know, shoving it off to your publisher and all of that. I've said that many a time. You have to do a million things. And when you're a good person, it really does show through your writing as well.
Well, thank you. I think you're right. That it makes, and it's all our life experience, you know. So if, I guess if you're someone who doesn't examine your life, you wouldn't have much to write about.
Oh, very true. What is your favorite spanking book that you have written to date, and why?
You know, it's often the last one I wrote, I think. So I'm just, I just published The Professor's Girl. It just went up live on Amazon last night. And unfortunately went up live with someone else's cover, but it should get swapped out. And this one, I really went there with the hot sex. So it was, it's a professor and his graduate student. And he drives all the way up to Phoenix. They're in Tucson. He drives all the way up to Phoenix to attend a spanking party because he doesn't want to be seen by, you know, students or colleagues. And lo and behold, there is his graduate student and, you know, employee in his lab. And so she hides. She's terrified. She hides from him. But then later she's kicking herself thinking, okay, my hot professor is into the same thing I'm in. So she starts, you know, she goes to him and says, would you be my disciplinarian? He says, that's totally inappropriate. I'm your thesis advisor. I can't do that. So she starts teasing him. She leaves a hairbrush out in the lab. She looks ping pong paddles. She's trying to tease him into taking hold of her. And eventually she ends up accidentally screwing up their research, and so he does give her that spanking she's dying for. And so they get into this very hot, illicit relationship, which they have to keep a secret from the rest of the department because it's not considered appropriate. And anyway, so I think some of the sex I wrote in there is the hottest I've written so far, so it was pretty fun for me.
That sounds pretty steamy. I love it. Great idea.
Thank you.
I'm going to interrupt both of us for a second for a station identification break, just because I hope that folks will call in and ask you questions. You're such a delightful guest. If you're interested, guys, it's 714-242-5259. You're on the Edge with Cassandra Dane, and I'm talking with the lovely, spanking author, Renee Rose. Now, how many publishers are you actually working with, and do you do any self-publications yourself?
I have not self-published yet. I have worked with, I think, five now. So I just published my new one, which I published the BDSM. It's a medical BDSM, and I published it under the name Darling Adams. And I used a new publisher called Baronet Press, and they are really wonderful. They're pretty pretty new on the scene. In fact, I was their first. They exclusively had published Casey McKay, who's a wonderful, spanking author, and then I was their first other author. So so that's been pretty fun, and they're really easy to work with in terms of I have a great relationship where I can just say, hey, this is what I want, and they go with it, so it's wonderful.
That's great. That's great. And Darling Adams, that's a great name. So this is more of a BDSM-geared piece?
Yeah, and the reason I made that distinction, I'm totally open that Renee Rose also writes as Darling Adams, but I came to this realization that I think people who are into spanking are also into BDSM books. But a lot of the people who are into BDSM can't hang with the spanking, and it's mostly like they can't hang with the domestic discipline type of stuff. Because like they're into it in the bedroom, in the erotic context, and it can even be punitive, but it still has that erotic edge to it. But this straight disciplinary spanking, I think, makes them a little queasy. And so in realizing that, I thought I would rename the books where that content isn't in there, where there's no just the next discipline spankings. It all stays in the more erotic context. And that way, people who are squeamish about the spanking fiction know to stick to Darling Adams. And then I think the people who would like Renee Rose will also love Darling Adams, though.
That's also an interesting aspect that you bring out, too, because I clearly try and identify spanking as an erotic form, spanking as discipline, and BDSM. BDSM can involve spanking, or more appropriately put, flogging, whipping, that kind of thing. But it's used in completely different scenarios, as in it is meant for playtime. Playtime, it can be painful, and playtime can take the submissive into subspace if that's what you're trying to achieve. But there are some BDSM couples that also use that as discipline, just depending.
Right. Yes.
I think.
I agree, and I think the line is pretty gray. You're right.
Yes, yes. What I've found is the domestic discipline folks are the most super critical of the lifestyle.
Yes.
I think it's because there's less understanding of it than you can have a kink or a fetish over here and flog somebody, or you can have a little light bacon in the bedroom with fuzzy handcuffs. But, you know, the bit in between is I think, difficult for society. So it's interesting.
Right, and I think part of that with the spankos is that, like I said, shame is a huge component for them, and so a lot of them are in shame about it, and they would prefer to not think of it as kinky.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, no, I'm doing this because I want to be a better person, and, you know, his dominance turns me on. I can admit that, but really we're just we're not kinky, okay? We just think. So it's like they're trying to, you know, stay away from, and, you know, people think, like, dominance of submission has to be leather and whips and chains. And,
right.
And it doesn't. It can just be head of household or alpha male or, you know, just, or I guess alpha female. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be gender specific here.
Well, I think, of what folks think traditionally, I mean, that's just, you know, laid out there is the majority of couples, it seems like, are male-female oriented, where the male is the alpha and the female is the submissive. But it is all over the place.
It sure is.
It's interesting to see that I get more DOMs, D-O-M-M-E, females, that are interested in potentially having me live the lifestyle with them. that I get the male portion, and that's just, of course, the persona of my writing name, and I'm sure you get a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Well, what I've heard, you know, I think in the on blog land, we see a lot more of the female submissives. But I think they're the ones who are blogging. But my understanding is that at parties and stuff, there's a lot more of the male submissives. So I think it kind of just, you know, the fiction, the writing isn't so much, you know, we always know, we always, the old thing where male or, men are more visual and women are more imaginative in terms of their sexual turn on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it's probably equal. I don't know. And that, but it's just that on blog land, we see all the MS relationships because it's the women who are blogging.
For your BDSM work, what kind of research are you now doing to try to make it as accurate as possible? Because, again, you don't live the lifestyle.
Right. So this was my first, and it was, I did medical BDSM. And I really went with, it was actually very therapeutic for me because I do hate doctors. And when I think this is that same thing of me being afraid of male authority at work. The reason I hate doctors is that they presume an authority over your body, which as a submissive I ought to love, right? So
right.
It was like, you know, writing this book helped me realize, oh, okay, this is actually super, super hot in the fetish context. And so, you know, I have basically the premise of, it's called Yes Doctor, and the premise is the nurse assistant is working in a gynecologist office, and she gets caught smoking out back by the hot doctor. And, oh, and she's also talking on the phone saying, oh, yeah, he can give me a pelvic exam any day. So, of course, he's like, who are you talking about, you know? And so he gives her that exam, and it's, you know, it's pretty hot. He's tying her up with surgical tubing and, you know, just all that sort of, like, palpating, you know, talking about her like she's not there, you know, making notes in his notebook about her body, you know, sort of treating her like an object, right, which is the thing that I object to about medical establishment. You know, I hate feeling like I'm not in the room. They're just talking about my body or, you know, or that they have authority. They make these decisions without, you know, explaining or discussing things with me. I mean, I just took my daughter to the orthodontist and I was so annoyed. She was, you know, rattling off numbers of teeth. Like, I don't know the numbers of teeth. And, you know, just telling me she's going to pull this one and pull that. And she didn't ask me if I wanted her to pull my daughter's teeth. You know, it's like, it was like everything I hate about medical authority. But by writing this book, I realized, okay, that's exactly what makes it hot. It's that, mm-hmm. you know, where they're in control of your body. And that's, and the submissive is required to just give it all over. And just for the note, a lot of times medical BDSM includes enemas, and this one did not. I wasn't ready to go there, so this one.
It doesn't
in case
have
anyone
to,
was
girl.
Squeamish about enemas, yeah. Not that I can't. I'm not that I'm saying I'll never go there, because I probably will, but we'll see.
But never say never.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the fascinating thing about BDSM or spanking or whatever. There is so many avenues you can go in. Some of them are a little weirder than others.
Right?
You know,
well, and you know, I mean, it's like a lot of things, like I think just like medical BDSM, and the way that came up was, you know, I was telling my husband about it, and I was like, it does nothing for me. And he was like, well, right, because you hate doctors. So yeah. Then that became something I explored. And the same thing, you know, I didn't think I was into age play. Well, of course, as soon as I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, super hot. Yes, I get it. It's smoking hot, like daddy, daughter, really hot, you know. So I think a lot of times, it's just a matter of someone kind of showing you how something can be hot or exploring it for yourself, and then you realize the appeal of it there.
And there is tremendous love of this. You can put just about anything, and some of which I'm sure you have been warned as to what you shouldn't write about, and I'm not talking, you know, bestiality and all of that per se, but things like, I don't know, lactation or golden showers or some of the things that are definitely on the far end of the kinky mode.
Right.
But they sell.
Right. And, like, you know, and I think that's one of those things, too, where, well, I didn't realize lactation was a thing. I'd written it in one of my stories just because as a nursing mom, I had hot sex when I was nursing. I thought my breasts were really hot when I was nursing. So
right.
To me, that was hot. But But the shower thing I didn't really get, and I don't know if I still get it, but Emily Tilton has, I read a few of hers where it's like this, it's, I think this is more of like almost an age play thing where it's like the heroine was not allowed to go pee, and so then she had to like wet herself and while everyone's watching, and it was like part of that humiliation component. And
right.
I totally got it. Like, she writes things in a way where you just totally understand why, what the appeal is. You know, it's why it's hot. And I hope I do that for people who aren't into spanking. Like, I think I have a friend who reads my work, and she's like, "Yeah, I'm not into it, but I got wet." You know, so that's I think then I did a good job.
I think if you can have anyone who comments that they got wet or hard or pick something, you're doing something right.
That's right. Definitely our goal.
Absolutely. And what is so fascinating too about the Kindle or the Nook or whichever one you read or reading on your iPod is that nobody has to know what you're reading. You can download it at a moment's notice. You want to do it at lunch. You want to do it at night. It doesn't matter.
That's so true.
Explore every little
That's
fetish
exactly
you have.
Right. Yeah, I honestly didn't start reading romance until about 3 years ago, because I had gotten my degree in creative writing, and it was, I don't know, I think they just sort of drilled it into our head that genre romance or genre fiction, you know, wasn't good enough, and so I only read literary fiction. And then a friend lent me a book for an airplane ride, and it was a friend who, you know, intelligence I respect, you know. So I was like, really? You read this? And she's like, yeah, read it. It's good. It was really good. I went home, you know, I read everything. It was a Jennifer Cruzy, and so then I went and read everything she had. But I remember I went to the acupuncturist, and I had this, like, you know, paperback romance novel with the, like, guy with the ripped abs on the cover, and I was totally embarrassed. You know, and the guy's like, what are you reading? And I'm like, oh, don't ask. So you're right. I mean, the Kindle totally takes that pressure off of, like, trying to hide what you're reading. You know, you don't have to worry about it. So that's great.
I do, too, and I think that's allowed for the tremendous growth in what is the publishing world. I mean, it has completely changed in the past few years. I know you have been published now for, I think you said, about 2 years?
Yes, right.
And even in those, and 2 years is not very long in the scheme of things, even though there are new crop of writers that pop up every day, it's still not a long time. And
right.
I'm sure you've seen changes.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It has changed a lot. And even just in the spanking romance, like, there's been sort of a flood on the market, I would say. So it used to be sort of almost anything sold. And I think now things can get buried a little more because there's so much being released every day.
There is. And I think that, what I found sort of interesting is people, though, really want to read, it seems like, I might be wrong, and this is just based on my experience, but about some of the real-life journeys that people are taking, hence some of these blogs doing so well.
Right.
You know, it's another little avenue, and writing blogs, people want to know some of the real you, even if sometimes it's made up real.
Right. It's true.
What do you use in your marketing of trying to get these kinds of books out?
Well, let's see. I mean, I feel like my strategy is changing a little bit lately because of, like I said, there's been this sort of glut in the market. I mean, I think we know that the most powerful tool is Amazon recommendation and referrals. So really, it's like trying to drive sales within those first 72 hours to get so that Amazon will click in. And so sometimes if you do a paid ad, you're better off doing it like a shorter period of time for more money, you know, like more hits or, you know, if you're doing it sort of like a Google ad or a Facebook ad, just because once you get the system, the Amazon recommendations bumped, then you'll pretty much stay at selling at that level because then they're referring you. They're doing your work for you.
Right.
So a lot of times it's just making the blip enough to get, so for example, I was releasing a new Regency, and so I thought, well, I'll just advertise my old Regency for this month, the month before that one comes out, just to kind of get people primed. And so it used to be that you could place a Google AdWords using an Amazon link, which they no longer allow you to do. Now you have to go to your website first. But so I placed an ad for that, and it kicked it up from And it had been out for 8 months, so it was an old book. So it kicked an old book up to a 10,000 ranking, and it stayed there. And it stayed there, I mean, even after I stopped paying for the ad, it stayed there for months and months. So it was just a matter of, like, kicking it far enough into Amazon's little referral system that, and then once you get there, then you're golden.
Mm-hmm. See, I've not done that yet, and maybe that's part of what I'm missing is actually trying to do an ad like that. There are so many things out there, you just don't know what works very well.
I know, and, you know, some of them are just so exorbitant, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So what we're trying on this, the new, the Professor's Girl that's coming out, that just came out this weekend, is we're trying to do just 3 days on Facebook, you know, with a pretty hefty, because you could use pay-per-click, so it was, this is part of a box set, so there's five of us. And so we all pooled our money. So we have, you know, quite a bit of money for just a short amount of time. So that's giving us, I don't know, like $65 a day to boost the post. And we'll see if that gives it, you know, the legs it needs to stand on in Amazon.
Yeah, and some people have very good success. I have heard that. And then others say it doesn't work at all. I think it depends on the year, the kinds of books, the author's reputation or multiple authors, whatever it is. I think that's... it's trial and error, and what works today does not necessarily work in a month.
That is absolutely true, because that's that. You know, I tried the Google ad thing after that with that wonderful success, and that was over a year ago. And then I have not had the wonderful success with it since, and it was just a waste of money. So, you know, it is just it's finding the thing that'll boost it up in Amazon, and it may not always be the same thing.
I don't know. I play around with titles a lot because it seems like different ones like a humiliation or whatever do boost it up. I have a one that I did a little short piece that I had done from some flash fiction and just finished it off, and it is one of those rare ones on Amazon, I think, because it got kicked up, that it is just staying there. And I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Just
that's
was an accidental happenstance, as
yep.
I call it. You know.
That's right. So look at, like, what keywords, like you said, it could be humiliation, like what keywords, they say even keyword-rich blurbs, something in the title, or things that you tag it at, all of those things are really important for getting Amazon to recommend it. And I know someone who just put out a book, and it didn't do as well as others in the series, and she said, you know, I think it's because I left cowboy out of the title. And
yes.
The other ones all had cowboy in the title, so people are searching for cowboy.
And I would definitely agree with that. I've seen a couple of those
yeah.
anthology collections, same kind of thing, multiple authors and Marine or Navy SEAL or, you know, those kind of things are, God knows, Harley Rider. You could just about put Harley in anything and it's going to sell. I mean,
I didn't know that. Hey, maybe we need a Harley Spanking romance.
there you go. I'm going to make a dare on this broadcast today. I want to see a Harley
All
Spanking
right.
story from you, girl.
You got it. I'll do it.
You come back to me and you tell me. Oh, my God.
I'll tell
it was my number one book.
I can't wait. That's awesome.
But it is kind of funny what will do that. Do you find you're on Pinterest, correct?
Yes.
And Twitter and all that, I know. Do you think any of those are working, the combination? Do you feel like if you dropped one off it would hurt in any way, or are you really just not certain?
I don't think Pinterest does much. I think Instagram is going to be the next, you know, up and coming in terms of pictures. You know, because Instagram has that, it's sort of like Twitter, but photos, you know, so it's just like that. You can take a picture of your shoe, send it from your phone, it's up, you know, take a picture of your breakfast, it's up there. I don't do that, but I think, you know, it's easy for the shameless self-promotion, which is what Twitter originally was. And now I feel like I had a lot more traction with Twitter when I only have 900 followers. And now I feel like with 3,000, I don't seem to get anywhere with it. So it's kind of interesting.
I find a little bit on, again, it's when I do, if I do the hashtags at spanking, at domestic discipline or whatever, it gets retweeted constantly or and all of that. I don't know how much it's doing as far as sales per se, because you just don't quite know that breakdown, but it certainly
yeah,
does
no,
help.
I mean,
area.
I feel like I used to get, I would use a buffer, what am I saying? Like a buffer app. link shortener so I could tell, and they used to get clicked on. Like, my links used to get clicked on from Twitter, and now I feel like they don't. So there's something I'm not doing right anymore. I don't know exactly, but
I just feel like
the fee got too big or something.
Well, that's probably it, and I think Twitter is, for the lack of a better word, passé.
Maybe so.
You know, if you think about it with Tumblr, and Tumblr's, dear God, you can, all you have to do is type in anything you're thinking about, Tumblr. Tumblr on the in Google and hit click, and it's like, oh my God, I had no idea. And they're amazing, and they're
funny.
Very risque. You know, they haven't gotten to that censorship level.
When people were saying they were going to, because Yahoo bought them, and so, you know, that was the story, was that, although the owner, when he sold to Yahoo, he said no one will be getting censored, but they took them out. I thought supposedly they took it out of the search list, but it sounds like maybe not.
I don't think so, because literally I'll type some in every other day just out of curiosity more than anything, see what's out there, and it's like, oh, wow.
Right.
I didn't know
there, there's a lot of
that.
Hot Tumblrs. Yes, right. There's some really hot ones. And I also, like, I'm a fan of Spanking Tube. I think it's pretty hot.
Yes.
It's like a, just, you know, an amateur where people just post their own videos.
Oh, yeah. Yes, those are very hot. I have looked at many one of those, too, myself. I'm not going to tell a lie.
Right.
What is the kind of book that you, is there one in particular or a style or something that you're just craving to do and you just can't find the time?
Well, honestly, I want to switch gears under a different pen name, and I'm about halfway done with a children's story,
mm-hmm.
but it's just been so much slower going than, you know, these fantasy stories just pour out of me because they're my fantasies, and for some reason, and I don't, I think once I get in the hang of it, the children's might be as easy as the erotic, but for now, it just feels like pulling teeth. It's like, or, you know, wading through mud or something. I just don't know where I'm going with it, and, you know, and then I worry about, you know, voice, am I writing too adult, and did I use words that, you know, are too, you know, so it's like trying to keep the voice simple and yet relatable. You know, of course, you want adults to read it with their kids, and so, I don't know, it's a challenge. I'm shooting for that, like, 12 to 14 age group, so I'm kind of, you know, it's hard to know, like, how adult you write with it. And, you know, I've heard some of the things like Diary of a Wimpy Kid that were actually, like, he wasn't gearing those towards kids, he was gearing them towards adults, and they've been crazy with the kids. So, you know, maybe I don't even need to worry about that.
Yeah, I think that there is such a mixture now with the young adult, new adult, you know, all of that, that they are bridging what they read, and I think that the younger readers are more mature than we probably want them to be. And
right.
There's been so much concern about the, you can't have a kiss, you can't have a, you know, certainly don't, they don't have sex until they're, you know, somewhere in their 40s, you know.
Right.
You know,
right.
And there's just a lot of concern about it, so that would be tough
right.
for me to write for that age group.
Yeah, it's, and I think, you know, I'm sure it'll get easier, like anything, but for now it's been, I've already been working on it since June, so that's a long time from, usually I write like a book a month, so it's, and I'm only halfway done, but it's also twice as long as most of mine, so it's, I don't know, anyway, it's a challenge.
Well, you'll do it. It's the kind of thing where you love writing, that's what you want to do, and those different genres are going to grow you, help you change and evolve as a writer. I think you'll be a different author in 2 years than you are now.
I'm sure you're right. And I think, and because I feel like I am, like one thing I've learned, I think lately, is I think I used to rely on like really heavy punishment as the tension. And now I think I can use, I use a lot more like just DS or relationship tension, and I don't have to go heavy with the, you know, the spanking that sometimes would turn people off, and my editor would say, hey, dial it back, my goodness, like. You know, but I, you know, I was a pain slut, so I was really into the, you know, crazy punishment. But I think, you know, it's like as I mature, I'm, you realize there's other options. You know, you don't have to always go there. You can use other forms of dramatic tension and that sort of thing.
There is a new, well, not new. It's been around for a long time, but it's been very underground and I think it can mean a couple of different things, although it's based on a traditional mold, DubCon. Have you heard of it and or considered it?
Well, I'm a huge fan of non-consensual. And I think it's, honestly, it's because this is my take on why non-consent is so much hotter, or dubious consent is so much hotter, is it ups the risk level. So, you know, and I used to, especially that's why I didn't like BDSM, because to me, like, you already consented by heading in the bedroom with him, so it's not that interesting. And that's
right.
Why I liked the, like, real punishment thing. It was like, oh my God, I don't want to be spanked for, you know, locking the keys in the car. Or, oh, I don't know, whatever. I'm not making something stupid up. But, and that, so it's like that non-consent makes, you know, it ups the risk. It makes it hotter. And so I think I wrote a lot of historical spanking romance because, you know, consent doesn't become an issue. It was the norm back then. Obviously, probably not as much as my heroines get spanked. But, you know, it was okay for a man to spank his wife. And so in that case, I have societal consent, and I don't need my heroine's consent. It's a little trickier in contemporary to not have the hero come off as a jerk and still have a non-consensual spanking. So that's, you know, that's harder, but I think you can still work it in there.
Well, it's interesting because I have a particular publisher who is, I've done a book that was so far beyond what DubCon was, and it bordered into a different level of abuse, and it's a whole, that's a whole other conversation to have, but she's eager for me to do DubCon, and it's kind of one of those bridges for me. I already write in so many genres. I fear a little bit what authors or what readers will say, even though it's hot.
Yeah.
People want some of that.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's really hard. I think it's really tricky because on one hand they want it, but they want it. They want to like everybody and they want it. So it's like, you have to make it palatable and you have to make it non-consensual. And that is a real trick, I think.
Yes.
It's, you know, because people, it's like, yeah, the spankos, when they review, I mean, they're always like, oh, this one wasn't fair, this one, you know, it's like they really, you know, so ideally you want to make it where, like, both people, you know, both the hero and the heroine had good reasons, you know, she had a good reason for whatever, disobeying, he had a good reason for, you know, punishing, you sympathize with both. It's a tricky game, you know, it's like, but you want people to walk away feeling good about it and getting off, so it's pretty tricky.
It is, and I think that we're so in tune, or the society is, and of course women are still the, you know, higher percentage of readers of romance, and we're kind of used to the Harlequin days and the, you know, happy ever after and happy for now, and let's vomit some more if we have the billionaire who takes the young girl that has the perfect children by the end of it with the, you know, $1 million that they have to go off to the freaking Greek islands. That ain't
right.
My life.
Yep.
It's a whole thing that people still, and it sells big. And no offense to any of you wonderful authors out there. Trust me, I think it's fabulous you do it. Gag me.
Right.
I don't know. I think that it's beautiful that we can do a little bit of everything nowadays, and there is a market for it. It's just how you sell it and how people perceive the way you're writing it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I had that thought recently. I won't say which book I read, but, you know, I just was curious about, like, okay, this book has sold, you know, bajillions of copies on Amazon, and it's, you know, supposedly DS. So, let's see, and it was exactly, it was like the total Cinderella, you know, billionaire. And it was like so unbelievable, but the sex was super hot. But I was like, okay, so people just really want Cinderella. You know, that's all, I mean, they don't want to think too hard. So I get it. You know, and I think what I took away from that was like, oh, okay, you can really go all the way with the sex. Like, because, and I think that's maybe why I'm writing a little hotter now. Like, I think that was a good example for me to feel like, okay, just a little bit of plot and a ton of sex and it sells. All right, got it. Check. I can do that. So that was part of Darling Adams, you know, like hot medical sex. Got it. Check. You know, a little bit of plot. Check. We're done.
That's what the porno movies were made of back in the day.
There you go. That's exactly right. It's women's porn. I mean, it really is. It's like we like the imagination stuff over the visual, supposedly.
I think there's so much DS, MS, whatever out there that the market is flooded to a huge degree now. And where are we going to move on to next? Well, let's see. What is left out there? That's why I think that the ones that are considered a little bit terrifying for Amazon even to put out, although they're there, all romance e-books, you know, you fought us for a while. Guess what, folks? They're there. You know,
yep.
Daddy porn or whatever you want to call it, it's just selling like wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, right, and so I just placed an ad, I tried to place that Facebook ad, like I said, for Professor's Girl in the set, and Facebook kicked me back and said, this is adult, we don't do adult. So I argued back, like, no, it's on Amazon, it's not tagged adult. And I haven't heard back. But then I was thinking, like, really, like, all these companies who are turning down or trying to censor are going to miss out on so much money because this is really where people are spending their money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and that's why Amazon, you know, kind of talks out of both sides of their mouth. You know, like, oh, yeah, we don't, you know, but they still sell it because it's a huge, huge industry. And like you said, in the last few years, e-books, I mean, it's changed everything. The accessibility for people to get the fantasy they want is just it's right there at their fingertips.
And the fans that are loyal with whatever fetish you allow them to enjoy, they are loyal for a lifetime.
I think you're right. That's it.
And you can't ask for anything better than that. I don't, you know, they'll cross my genres.
Right.
They might tolerate my male-to-male knowing that they're going to get their fix at whatever point.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
It's fascinating, and I'm really thrilled about that. What's coming up in the future for you? What are the books that you're writing, and what are going to be published next?
Yeah, so I'm working on a paranormal BDSM. So this will be under Darling Adams, my BDSM name, and that's to come out October 1st. You know, because we're going for the Halloween paranormal thing, and it's. It was that one where I'm playing more with the tension, the dominance and submission tension between the characters as opposed to the heavy punishment kind of thing. So it's pretty hot. It's a vampire who moves in with a, you know, he sees a witch on the street and he moves in because he's got a curse that he wants her to undo. And she, of course, doesn't know she's a witch. And so he's like, well, you're going to learn and you're going to fix me. And he just makes himself at home, he says, I'm living with you until you fix it. So she's stuck, you know, essentially kidnapped and stuck with him until she can figure out. But it turns out that she was the witch in a past life who cursed him. So she is able to eventually reverse the curse.
Mm,
and, of course, there is
I like
happily
that.
Ever after. Yes. It's pretty sweet.
Well, it's different, though. Very different. What's the title? Do you have that yet?
Yes. The title is Loose Morals.
Mm.
And it'll be out October 1st.
And which publisher is that one going to be with? The same one you mentioned?
That is with Baronet Press.
Fantastic. So what do you think is on the horizon for writers in the future? Do you think that the industry is going to continue to change, and where are you fearful it might go?
I think, well, the one thing that I think that this ebook market has made possible is the ability to make money while you're learning. So in the past, it was like you had to spend 10 years crafting the most perfect book so that you could send it in with your query letter, and or maybe just your synopsis and query letter, and get a contract with one of the top five. Now, you could be like me, you could write something in 6 days, have it published 2 weeks later, and make $1,000, you know, and be ready to, you know, so it was like I'm so grateful for this ebook market that allowed me to become a better writer over the last 2 years and make a full-time living. I don't think that was possible before, and I think that's just amazing. And I'm sure, you know, in 5 years I might be embarrassed about what I put out, you know, at first, but, you know, that's, I think, like you said, I've got fans for life, so they'll hang with me and they'll forgive my early stuff, so.
Do you, that's a very interesting topic I'm going through now, having to put several books back up that were taken off the market for not selling very well. And I go back and I read them and I go, holy hell, in a handbasket.
I know.
What knows?
I know.
Do you see yourself ever redoing some of the first ones?
I think I always want to. Like, I just had that conversation with myself yesterday. Like, oh, I should really fix those. You know, I was thinking, well, maybe I can get get the titles back from the publisher and put them out myself. But then, I mean, really, I feel like my energy is better spent, you know, writing the new stuff. So
right.
Probably I won't unless for some reason I'm stuck on writing the new stuff and it'll serve me to go back. But otherwise, I think I'll just keep moving forward with it.
Yeah, it's very daunting, I will tell you that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, for anybody who hasn't done it, ugh, that's all I can say. Having a wonderful publisher is helpful.
Yes.
Well, where can we find all of your fabulous books? Where do they have these beautiful things for sale?
So, of course, Amazon. And my website is ReneeRoseRomance.com, and that has both Darling Adams and Renee Rose books on it.
Fantastic. And your stuff's on all romance e-books and stuff, isn't it? Barnes & Noble.
I'm sorry?
Okay, all the normal places.
All romance
okay.
e-books, exactly, yes. Barnes & Noble, Blushing Books, yep, all of those.
Do you tend to write a lot of blogs, or do you really not have the energy or time to be able to do that as well?
Well, what's interesting about that is I used to write about my personal spanking life. And I think it was like you said, where I'd get like tons of hits, you know, people, a lot of comments, you know, just a lot of engagement from the community. Well, then my mother-in-law found the blog. And suddenly I didn't feel so comfortable. Yeah. So you know, anytime I'm about to write a personal blog and I start thinking, my mother-in-law's going to read this, it just makes my mouth go dry. So now I'm really boring. I have this boring blog that just posts, like, books and other people's books, and that's it. And, you know, I have some regrets because I feel like I lost, you know, that sense. I had community with the domestic discipline bloggers. Like, we would share things, and now I don't. And I feel like I'm also just kind of spammy now, like where I'm only posting promotional stuff. But then I'm like, well, it's probably safer in the long run not to be so out there with my business, and I don't know. So the reason I found out that my mother-in-law had read was that she sent me a long letter about protecting my children and stuff like that. So it was very annoying.
That my personality to be like, husband of mine, tell her to back off or I'm bringing out the claws and the fangs. Just saying, that's me. You may consider, though, a hybrid situation as you're getting into writing more BDSM. What I have found and am so grateful for, because I am, whether I've tried a little this or a little of that, I am no expert in any of that. And the community will revolve around someone who wants to learn. And if you give them a voice to whatever degree, you can certainly have some interesting information on your blog that isn't about your life.
That makes sense, yes. That's a good idea. Yeah.
And you're kind of bringing them in, too, and the community bringing them back. It's just, you know, and again, that's another little fine line, because if they're talking about flogging, you know, people in public, that would certainly not, I would imagine, be something your mother-in-law would enjoy. But then again, you never know.
I know, I know. That's just it, where I'm like, I wonder.
Mm-hmm. Those who shout the loudest against, you know how that old adage is?
Oh, yes.
What has been your relationship, I guess, with other authors and the basic community of writing, whether it's been in social media or just folks that have become your friends?
Well, I find the spanking author community to be amazing. Like, they're just, you know, like my book released yesterday, it's been shared already by a dozen other authors. You know, they just seem like they're really supportive. And I have a friend who's done another, a different genre, you know, under a different name and this one, and she said that the spanking community is definitely more, the other community was a lot colder to her, I think, than this one is. So I'm grateful we have a really nice group. And I mostly interact, I would say, Facebook. And sometimes I regret because I think, well, that's, I'm not blogging as much because I'm getting my six on Facebook, you know, and that's, but, and then that's not really my audience. But then again, you know, authors buy books too, so I think it's, nothing's wasted, so it's all good.
I think you have to touch a little bit of everything. I since there's no magic, if there were magic, we'd all be millionaires living on some beach somewhere with Cabana Boys. But
that's right.
You happen to be closer in a sense in being that you're in Tucson. But, although the beach is closer for me.
Yeah.
So where do you see yourself, girl, in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I hope that my children's writing is an equal force by then. You know, so I have sort of more diverse, a more diverse portfolio, should we say. So that's what I'm hoping to, you know, kind of get that, make that turn. I'm not going to abandon ever erotic writing, but I would like to get more experience in writing children's books and other sorts of books.
Well, then I think you will. I think you got a kind of a strong head on your shoulders, and I think you're going to do whatever you want and need to do.
Thank you.
Well, we are winding down in time, and you're going to hear dogs barking in a minute. This is real-time radio, folks, as my golden retriever pipes in from the background. If you would have one piece of advice that you would give to writers and those also that want to read your stories, what would you say?
So for writers, I would definitely just say keep writing. Like just, the, you know, it really, in this market, it really is putting out new books is what keeps you, you know, it sells your backlist, it keeps you going. So don't just sit and watch your book for months on end and how it's doing and try to promote an old book. Like, just keep writing new books. Because you get better, you get more sales, and then it'll push your back books up too. And then for readers, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of times for people who maybe don't know if they like spanking, I say, well, just, you know, keep an open mind. Like, keep in mind it's a fetish. It turns people on. Try it out, you know, because a lot of people didn't know they liked it until they read 50 Shades of Grey, and they only read that because it was the best-selling book. So, you know, give it a shot and see what you might like it more than you think.
Fabulous advice on both ends, and I have so enjoyed having you here today.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure for me.
You're a fabulous guest, and I hope you'll consider coming on again.
I would love to.
Wonderful.
All right, and well, have a great rest of your Sunday.
I will. You do the same. Say hello to lovely Tucson. It happens to be a place dear to my heart as well. So have a wonderful afternoon.
I will do that. Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Renee.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for being on The Edge with Cassandra Dane. You have been listening to the lovely Renee Rose, who I think you'll realize is just a delight. Remember that this is archived, so you can download it to your heart's desire at any time, and I hope you'll consider sharing the link. For me, I've got upcoming a wonderful guest all the way from England. J.S. Morbius is with Naughty Nights Press. He's a good friend of mine. He writes a lot of transgender pieces, and I'm so looking forward to having him on October 5th. Also, keep in mind, we got a couple of fabulous shows coming up on the World of Ink Network, including tomorrow, The Gates of Atlantis, on the Writing Mama show. And on the 9th, we've got A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper Cook. Thank you so much. Goodbye from lovely Virginia. And I wish you guys to have a fabulous afternoon with whatever you do. It's been a joy. Ciao.